Okay, we're going to start. I'm Bruce.
Hi, Bruce.
Feels a lot like dinner theater here. Right. How many people in the room want to be actors? How many already are actors?
We think we are.
Good distinction. Any equity members in the house? Okay, great. Yes? All right, let's pray. Technical folks, yeah. You know, I should have been more specific. You know, you guys got a union. A real strong union. You know, you guys got like a real job. All you have to be is related to somebody, is a Teamster, and like you're in, right? So I'm afraid, actually, I hadn't thought about this, but I can't speak to techies. Right. So you've got time now to run for something more worthwhile. Okay? Because actually, I'm an actor, and despite what your undergraduate theater department people say, you will never touch a prop as an actor. Okay? Because it's a union job. And you don't mess with the Teamsters. Right? So, techies have this whole other life. They, like, apply for jobs like real people. You know? So it's like, I mean, it's the same sort of relational thing, you know, you got to know somebody, and especially as Teamsters, it seems like they're all related to each other somehow, you know? But yeah, this is about, you're welcome to stick around, but I would actually say if there's anything else you want to do, I know we're kind of far from things here, you could run and do it. Sorry I didn't make that more clear, but you're welcome to stay. Huh. Yeah, okay. Say again.
Oh,
Arts and Culture Seminar. Yeah, that sounds good.
Film festival, which is great.
Film festival. How far away is the film festival?
It's in this building.
In this building. Techies, alert. Okay, so you really can leave anytime, and you're not going to hurt my feelings. Actors will hurt my feelings if they leave. Okay. Yes. Okay. All right. Let's pray. Holy God, boy. We act like you're not here most of the time. And we're sorry for that. Help us be more aware of you, not just in our work, in our lives, everything. Make good things happen. Stir hearts. Have real questions come up. Help us more and more authentically be ourselves. Boy, the trap for us actors. Help. Thanks. Amen. Okay. I'm gonna do a quick resume rundown, because that's what actors do when they meet each other, right? And hopefully my little journey will coincide with some of you and hit some questions that you want to ask. And I'm leaving this really flexible and wide open because I've got my little spiel and I've been talking to actors for a long time, actors of faith, and I've got points I can hit and lots of stories about agents and about the roles I thought I should turn down, but actually it turned out I didn't because actually I thought which role should I take was going to be my big, ethical dilemma. And it turned out, no, actually, self-absorption turns out to be my biggest ethical dilemma. And how do you deal with that? Because it's required. Because who we are and what goes on in our heads, the mental gymnastics we have to do our work well, takes self-absorption. So how do you kind of sidestep the spiritual pitfalls of self-absorption, because it's for the work, right? It's not ego like most of them accuse us of, and maybe rightfully sometimes, okay? But, yeah, okay. So, became a Christian freshman year in University, West Virginia University. I was a journalism major. Are you serious?
My dad went there.
Oh, there you go. Okay. I could be, yeah, anyway. Okay, so probably about the time I went there, yeah. Right, journalism degree, because the folks wouldn't pay for a drama major, right? But I got cast, so the professors let me in their majors only classes. So at the end of 4 years, I had squeezed every drop of training out of that program without having to take history of costume design. Right? And the majors were telling me, don't be a major, really. If you don't have to be. And I didn't have to be. But I got enough training, just enough training to realize that an undergraduate degree, nobody cares about your undergraduate degree, right? You all knew that, right? So there's multiple tracks. I realized in probably the same place, about the same age most of you are, that if I wanted to be an actor when I was 60, I needed training to do the kind of acting I wanted to do. You know, I wanted to do the wide range. I wanted to be able to do Shakespeare as well as musical theater and, you know. So I needed training, and even though I was a journalism major, you know, I said, if I'm going to spend, and the parents' money had run out, you know, they gave me the undergraduate, and I was grateful, but they said, you want to be a doctor or grad school, it's yours. So if I was going to pay that kind of money and put off the theater career for another 3 years, I might as well go for the best. So I picked the top five programs in the U.S., and I auditioned for them. And, you know, Yale and Juilliard didn't want me. Their loss, you know. But somebody, the University of Washington in Seattle actually did. And they had a 3 year, you know, 12 people per class, 3 years program, really intense and really market ready stuff. And I don't know the situation now, what kind of program they have or anything. Yeah?
That's good.
That's good to hear. Okay. Right. So, yeah, I got into it, and 3 years there, and then there used to be these things called TCGs, were national finals where usually a couple of people from all the best training programs actually got into the finals, and there we were in front of all the repertory theater, the heads of the artistic directors of the repertory theater companies throughout the country, and we got to do 5 minutes, right? And, okay. Can't resist the story. So we got 5 minutes. Monologues honed down to 2 minutes, which is always a good idea, right? Classical, contemporary. And I had a minute left over, and I thought, hey, I can sing. You know, might as well use that one precious minute to sort of get all the tricks, you know, in front of them. So I had this stupid opera song from Scapino, and I decided when I would do this slipping on a banana peel bit into a split, and when my crotch hit the ground, I would jump the octave. Right?
Okay.
Okay. I'm not going to ask you to picture that. Okay, but you already have. Okay. So I did it in front of my classmates, and they laughed. And they said, don't tell Dr. Bob, because he won't let you do it, because I'm representing the program, you know. So I didn't tell Bob. So, I mean, they roared, my classmates did. And when I actually did it in front of the heads of every major regional theater company in the country, there wasn't quite as much laughter. And I'm not feeling very good about this. And I sit down, and I say to another actor who I knew, who I worked with, and I said, I either made a complete ass of myself or, like, impressed them with my courage, you know? And this guy said, you didn't make a complete ass of yourself. He lied. Right? And then we get lunch with John Jury, who is the head of Actors Theatre of Louisville at the time. I think he's at Seattle Rep now, and another theater on the East Coast. And, you know, just bring you lunch and sit down. And they told us, you know, this is not New York. We don't want to see every trick in your book. Right? And that's when I knew that I blew it in front of every... I mean, that's it. That's my repertory theater career. I just made an ass of myself in front of all these people. And they warned us, you know, nobody gets jobs out of these things because, you know, it's just you're seen by these people and you're the rookies, so don't get your expectations up. But if you get one or two, maybe three callbacks, that means they just want to talk to you and they're interested. And it's like, okay. And I, after this, I mean, humiliating experience, basically, is what that was turning into, you know, like, major. And I waited till all the other people were finished looking at the sign-up sheets. And some friends had gotten two or three, you know, callbacks, and that was great. And I went and looked at my name, and I got 7. Wow. And one of them was John Jury. And I walk in there, and we talk for a while, and he offers me D'Artagnan in The Three Musketeers. Because, like, one of the pieces was Mercutio, and I'd do the stage combat thing, and, like, that's what he needed for D'Artagnan. And it's like, bah, I'll use him. I was like, oh, great. And he said, I'll give you 2 days. I'll give you half my season, and I'll give you 2 days to think about it. And I laughed, and I said, I'll take it. What do you mean, think about it? You know, and he kept hiring me. So I was there for 2.5 seasons in the core company at Actors Theatre of Louisville, fresh out of acting school. And 2 years later, I asked him, you know, I did this, you know, this crotch split thing. What was you? And he's like, Bruce, hundreds of auditions. I don't remember any of that. It was like, oh, that's good. But then I was telling this story to some apprentices at Actors Theatre, and this woman said, you're the one. I went, ooh, tell me. She said, I was at SETC's, and we were doing the audition prep thing. And this woman said, you've got 2 minutes, and they don't want to see all your tricks. And there was this guy, and he will never work in theater again. That's the end of that story. So, like, yeah, like, take your chances and make a fool of yourself and try not to make a fool of yourself. And all that stuff, and you never know. Right? Right. Okay, so we're up to Actors Theatre now, right? 3.5 seasons, 2.5. And I left because I was, you know, I'd done 3 years. 3 years of, plus the 4 years, you know? And it was time to get to New York and, you know, and I'm going to do another side story here. John Jury, when I left, he said, here's a little bit of advice, take it or leave it. Know what you want. Know what you want. Do you want to work at Stratford? Good. Keep that in mind. Keep it firm in mind. And actually, pin a 5-year date on it. I will work at Stratford in 5 years. Because, here's why. Because actors get distracted really easy. Right? So, in 3 years, when... okay, here's a scenario. In 2 years, when you get that soap opera, right? Oh, that's a different story. Never mind. Okay. Distracted. Right.
Yeah.
Okay, Stratford. Right. Because 4 years from now, American Airlines is going to ask you to be their spokesperson. Right? And it's going to pay, you know, $75,000 a year. Now, you're enslaved to them for the whole year, and you have to do whatever they want, and you have to show up for all the commercials and all the openings of new airport lounges or whatever. You are going to be the face for American Airlines for a year for $75,000, you know? But you're also going to get a chance for a small role with that director you worked with who now got a job at Stratford, and he's got a place for you. What are you going to do? Right? Now, 3 years from now, you may be married, and a kid is on the way, and you may legitimately say, forget Stratford. I got $75,000 here. It'll allow me to do other things and all that, and that's legitimate. But if you don't set that javelin in the wet cement, you know, of 5 years from now, you may not be ready to make that decision, and you may just grab one, right? Which is what actors do a lot, because work is so scarce, and it's really hard, right? So, it's really good advice, and I should have taken it better. Because 5-year plans haven't worked for me, ever. Okay, so, Actors Theater, 2.5 years, went off, got a national tour of a show in New York, and left it for love. Wow. Took a gamble on a relationship. You know, left this national tour to move to Seattle to see if I was going to get married, and I lost the gamble. She dumped me. Stayed in Seattle for a couple of years because I was getting better regional theater auditions in Seattle than I was in New York. because they organized, I don't know if they've got it anymore, but they had this co-op where they would fly in casting directors and artistic directors from these major regional theaters. You'd get 10 minutes alone in the room with the guy to talk, which you don't get to do with in auditions, you may have noticed, right? So this was fabulous. But yeah, John called me up and said, this stupid little Christmas musical, I lost my baritone, so I need you, because you did it already. So I'll give you half the season. It's like, I'll take it. So I was back at Actors Theater for another half season, went back to New York, and boy, that was like, I think it was 2 years in New York without work. You know, just laying down, auditioning. You know, I must have done 4 or 5 auditions, 6, 7 for Cats, you know, the ongoing sort of chorus replacement thing they do. And boy, one of those times, the casting director remembered my name. Wow, it was like getting a job, you know? And one morning, one morning, I'm word processing at Chemical Bank, and I should check my answering machine. Bruce, can you show up at the Broadway Theater at 2:00 with an older character up-tempo pop song for a Les Miserables audition? Of course. You know? And I hadn't done a musical audition for a couple of months now, and I warmed up, my boss, thankfully, was a retired dancer, so it was like, you've got a job when you come back. Not that it would matter, because if she said, you don't have a job when you come back, it's not like I would not do the audition, of course, right? So that's the kind of work you have in New York, like, I quit kind of work, you know? Yeah, so I'm under the Broadway Theater warming up with a couple other actors, and they all look like me. You know that odd feeling of looking around and going, these are the people I've been competing with for the last 2 years? You know? And you hear these glorious voices on stage above you, and it's like, and I got up there and I blew the lyrics on two of the songs, and it was like the pianist is like trying to help me. You know, it's like they've heard enough, really. You know, and by that time there was this kind of, oh, forget it, I've blown this one. Maybe another day, you know? And they say, how tall are you? It's like 5'9½". Okay, great, thanks. And 2 hours later, I got a Broadway job. Yeah. Yeah, now this is after 3 years of steady auditioning where I didn't forget the lines, right? Plus, I came to New York with this resume. So they knew I was an actor. I told this story. Walked into an agent's office, casting director for some soap, and he looked at my resume and said, oh, well, I know you're an actor. It's like, well, that's an interesting remark because you're a casting agent, and who else do you work with but actors? What do you mean you know I'm an actor? He said, well, you played Puck at Actors Theatre of Louisville. I know you could handle whatever soap opera role I give you. And there was this kind of, ah, boy, credibility paying off. How many graduates of undergraduate school are leaving school and going to New York or Toronto or Seattle or LA? Floods of them, and there is an industry built on you. They will do your resume. They will do your headshots. They will do your mailings. They'll do everything for you, this industry of new actors that will last about 2 or 3 years before they burn out. And meanwhile, the fresh crop is coming in, right? Right. How do you get past that? Oh, I'm just jumping all over the place. Another story. Walking into a casting agent's office, and the assistant has a stack of resumes that big, right? For today, and it's only 2:00, right? And she's picture, other side, glance, throw out. 1, 2, 3, 4 seconds, tops. Oh. And I said, what are you looking for, just out of curiosity? And she said, any MFA program with a reputation. She didn't like Academy of AMDA. Right. She didn't like that. So if you had AMDA on your resume, you were automatically in the garbage pile. I hope things have changed since then. I don't know. Okay. So it was like any agent submission gets filed in the real file. Any good repertory theater credits get automatically filed in the real file. Any agent submission automatically gets in the real file. I didn't see too many real file in the 15 minutes I was sitting there that she was going through that pile, right? So you need credibility when you go in there, when you go to New York, to say, I really am a professional because there's so many floods of them. I'm jumping all over the place. Okay, let me see. All right, so I'm in I'm in Les Mis. Yeah. I'm in Les Mis, and I've got this understudy of Thénardier, but I'm basically playing second soldier from the left and fourth beggar, you know? And 3 months later, Chess opens, if you remember Chess, right? Same director. He takes some of his favorites from Les Mis, casts them in Chess, Judy Kuhn and some others. And so there's some openings. And I talked to Richard, the production manager. Can I audition for the understudy for Javert? And he says, oh, Bruce, no, I really don't see you in Javert, right? It's like, oh, Richard, oh, well, okay, all right, Bruce, fine, you know? And I was not going to forget the lyrics on this one. I was going to be ready, and I was. And I hired the Yale directing grad to coach me for $50 an hour, you know? And I really, really got stars ready. And I did it. And, you know, it's dark out there. And I heard Richard say, Bruce, that was good. How tall are you? And I said, I fit in Jordan's costume, and I can wear Tony's boots. And I got the job. Right? It's like, this is not a nice business. Right? All of you, I'm pretty sure most of you could play second beggar from the left and fourth soldier. You know? And if your voice isn't any good, the sound guy can make it sound terrific. You know? But how do you get, what kind of business are we in where fitting the costume is what gets you the job? And it wasn't. It was 3 years of auditions where the casting director was on my side. And it was another 3 years in acting school. And it was another 2.5 years of classical repertory theater where they go, this guy's an actor, not just a chorus boy. Right? Right. And then meanwhile, the costume decides it. And here's where life got interesting. Ugh. I'm just going to do stories, and we're going to turn over this to question and answer soon, okay? Right, about 2 years into Les Mis, it's so nice to be in a hit Broadway show with a regular salary, right? And you walk into auditions, and they go, you would leave Les Mis for this? It's like, wow, respect, ha! Huh. You know? It was really hard to leave, but I really had to leave. Because most people leave after a year, you know? Because then it starts turning into, you're still in Les Mis? Yeah. Right? You're always thinking career stuff. And this casting director called me up and said, Bruce, well, I've got this role, national tour. You are perfect for this because we really need an actor, you know? So I'll give you a week and a half to prepare this song from the show and be ready. And you're going to walk off with this role. Then he calls me up the next day and says, made a mistake, can't give you a week and a half. You got to come in today at 2 o'clock. What have you got? I hadn't auditioned for much in 2 years. And I told him what I had. And there was this horrible pause on the phone that I hope you never hear in a conversation with a casting agent. And he said to me, no wonder you're still in Les Mis. Oh. And I came in the next day and I did what I could do, hoping for the Les Mis miracle that got me in there in the first place, right? And it didn't work and I lost the job. And I hope you're better prepared right? And meanwhile, I'm jumping all over the place. I won't. I did get out of Les Mis with a job, which is the only honorable way. You can't just quit a Broadway show, right? Right? So, I got into the bus and truck of chess, right? The national tour of chess. And, it closed 3 months later, and I knew it would, but it got me out of Les Mis honorably. You know, why did you leave Les Mis? A job, you know? And other stuff followed, but it was mostly musicals. My career was now on the musicals track, right? I really was a reliable understudy, right? And I started getting hired that way, and it was great. Except I was getting tired of musicals, right? And this woman I was dating, she said, "Oh, you poor thing. You're working as an actor in New York, but you don't like it. What would you like to do?" And I said, "Well, actually, about 12 years ago, when I was working at Actors Theatre of Louisville, I did this one-man show called The Gospel of Luke, where, I don't know if you've heard about it, but this guy named Alec McCowan, British actor, memorized Mark's Gospel, word for word, King James Version, took it to Broadway. He's not religious. Ran for a year. People seeing the Bible. $30 a shot during the week. You know? Yeah. So Actors Theatre of Louisville, John Jury said, "Hey, we could make money off the Bible." I told him I actually, you know, thought these things really happened and gave me the job, right? So that was 12 years ago, right? And I said, "I'd love to get that on its feet again and, like, I don't know, tour colleges or something, you know? Like, there are these one-person shows that do the performing arts circuit in college and, you know, they're paid a couple thousand per performance plus hotel and airfare, right? So, like, find me an agent. You know, work for Jesus and make a fortune." Oh. Right? That was my plan. Yeah. Yeah. And 6 months later, I found myself on Inner Varsity staff. Right? Raising my own salary. It's like I told the regional director, Bobby Gross, "Oh, no, people pay me to do this. I don't actually have to raise my own salary to do this, you know?" But there I was anyway. And it was only for a year, you know? And then it turned into 2 years because it was going great. And then, okay, just one more year, you know? And then I left staff. And 2 weeks after announcing my resignation at the national staff conference, just officially letting them know, and I was going to finish out the season, I met this incredible woman. And a year later, I was married and living on a North Sea island in Holland. Right. So what did I say about five-year plans? Right? And I wasn't going to be staying there for long, you know. But meanwhile, people keep asking me about Luke. So I kept on flying to the States. Airfare was cheap from Amsterdam, you know. And kept doing Luke. And then a year and a half later, the kids started arriving. And I kept doing Luke. It's been 15 years now. So literally half of my 30 years of working as an actor in the theater has been in ministry, right? But I've been able to make my living as an actor. So now I've got five solo shows in the rep, and I get to go places that I have never. I mean, I'm going to be in Nairobi in 2 weeks. I was in, what country was that? Whatever that was. What country is Harare? Somebody help me out here. Harare, the city of Harare, is in
Cuba.
It's not in Cuba. Americans. Surely the Canadians are better at geography. Come on. No. I'm an American. I'm terrible. Anyway, Singapore, and I did a show in Cairo, and Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia, and just all over the place. Incredible stuff I've gotten to do. But doing basically one show was not on the career trajectory, right? That was not my idea of what I wanted. But it turned out better than I wanted. I mean, I have friends. We'll talk about this too. The biggest crisis I came across, the reason that I got into Luke in the first place, was the crisis of content. It's like the sacrifice that we make for this life to do musical theater. Okay, I'm on the subway a couple of years ago, and you're always running into people on the subway. It's like, hey, did you hear about Joe? No, what? He's in Beauty and the Beast on Broadway. Oh, that's great. What's he doing? A dinner spoon. Yeah. Oh, that's great. Yeah. Now, I always thought Joe would make a great dinner spoon, right?
Yeah.
I had lunch with this beautiful Christian actress, you know, and she said to me, Will Rogers Follies is calling me again. This was years ago. And, you know, they've got this chorus role ready for me. They just want me. You know, another person left the cast, and they just offered it to me, you know. But I don't want to dress in a skin-tight cow costume and have my butt branded 8 times a week. There's got to be more to this. The sacrifice of the dance lessons I've taken for this. You know, a friend of mine that I went to school with at UW in Seattle, he gets around and he says, hey, I got in the latest Disney musical, right? I'm going to be the Shaggy Dog Colonel in 101 Dalmatians. At last, I get to use my classical actor training, right?
Yeah.
This is the life that you're looking at. 50% of the work is musicals. It's an amusement industry. You want to change the world? Go into missions. Right? You want to minister to actors? I got actually 2 choices for you. One, you can become a really good actor. Because actors don't listen to other people except actors. Right? So become a really good actor, a professional. Go shoulder to shoulder. Do your work well. Show up to rehearsals on time. Have your lines down. Be generous on stage. Look people in the eye, right? Give on stage, and you will get their ear. And there are so many hurting, desperate people in theater, right? That there's plenty of ministry opportunity for you, but not with your work, right? Because you're going to be doing musicals. And some people may get to work at Stratford. That'd be great. You know? I actually meant to start off this whole thing with this. The best advice I ever got, and the advice I always give, if you love anything else, if you can do anything else with your life, do that instead of theater. Right? You've been told that already.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's real. Because it's not a nice business, and no one cares. And I met this older actress, a little over the top. I've given my life to theater. Who cares? You know? C.S. Lewis said, if you make anything else a god in your life, it will turn into a demon. And the theater demon is especially nasty. It will chew you up. Right? And worse than that, the choices you make form you. Brief story. We're going to crack this open soon. I was speaking to an arts group at Redeemer Church in New York City, you know, Tim Keller, years ago. And I said to them, I'm an actor. I'm a New Yorker. I'm single. But in 2 weeks... I'm going to be married. I'm going to be moving to a foreign country. My whole notion of my career is going to get thrown out of whack because I'm going to be living in Europe. What? You know? So, who am I? Who am I? Your core identity has to be child of God. Has to be. Because theater will form you if you're not careful. Because the life in New York of having to do 100 to 150 auditions before you get the job, if you're good and fit the costume. You know, that kind of rejection forms people, especially if you come to it as needy as most actors. Right? What are you doing here? What are you thinking? I mean, we all have extra needs than people who were raised in good families. Right? Right. So if you can get therapy and fix that without a life in the theater, it's really worth the money. Okay. I'm gonna crack this open. What do you want to talk about? Yes.
It's funny you talked about musicals and stuff these days. And I feel like I'm very frustrated with Broadway right now, especially since I'm getting ready to start working possibly.
Have you got a job?
No, I haven't got a job. I'm getting ready to start auditioning.
Frustrated with Broadway.
Because
it won't give you a job.
No, not that.
The
not,
nerve.
That's
okay.
With musicals, they haven't always been that cheesy, and now a lot of musicals are like Disney, and they're making Spider-Man the musical.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hearing rumors about Matrix the musical.
Mm-hmm.
Why? What?
I'll tell you. What? Ticket sales. Period. Period. And you know, there wasn't any golden age of Broadway. I mean, back in the 40s, shows would run for 4 weeks, 6 weeks, and then go on the road. And, I mean, you talk about cheesy, there was a lot more junk. It was just, there was more of it. And it lasted a shorter amount of time. And now we're into the mega musicals. And, I mean, yeah, it's always been junk.
So would you say that the ones that we know about now, like the ones that have lasted years, are were just amongst the junk?
Cats?
It's like that. I'm not looking for my cat. But yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, the folks on the road, on the road tour. Well, the you know, it's a Cameron McIntosh show, so some of the folks, when Cats was still running, would come over to Les Mis, and they would find the other veterans, and they would say, "How long were you in the litter box?" And some of them were there a long time. Is Kathy still? She's still there. You know? Yeah. And there was one guy. You know, there's this slow motion run in Les Mis. And the first night, the guy from Cats comes over. He's running like this. It's like, long show. Yeah. Yeah. And I got to tell you the taxi driver story. Sorry. They needed my understudies for Les Mis. So I did San Francisco for the 5 weeks before they closed it down because the guy left. There was a guy there that was, I hope, anyone from San Francisco here?
You go to school near there.
Aha. Hopefully you won't know anyone I'm talking about. Okay? It wasn't a stellar cast. They were good, you know, but they were... A lot of them didn't have the training. They were Richard started hiring straight off of cruise ships and theme parks because, I quote, "I don't need a good actor. I just need someone who loves the story." Right? Yeah, frightening. Well, it was showing up on stage, okay? If this guy had a bad night with his boyfriend or his girlfriend, it showed up in his performance. I mean, they didn't have the training to sustain the quality that's necessary. But there was one guy who was particularly awful. I mean, just like so bad, they called him the taxi driver. Because they had a theory that he couldn't actually be the real actor and get a show, right? So they figure that the real actor had been bragging to the taxi driver on the way to LaGuardia, and the taxi driver pulled him over, killed the actor, and took over his identity. Right? So this is the taxi driver, right? So, you know, 6 months later, I stop backstage to see who's still there and to say hello, and the taxi driver is working on Broadway. It's not a fair business, but boy, he loved the show. And he pestered Richard until he got the job on Broadway. It's amazing. Yes?
Actually, well, I have something to say about that. It's really funny because when we say a fair business, I actually just got out of... I've done mostly community theater so far right now, and Rent just released the rights.
Uh-huh.
For that, so everybody can be doing it and stuff. And so I was like, finally, I'm a black actress in a mostly white community theater area.
Got it.
This is my time to shine. I have meaning.
Right.
That's my part, because Amy was black on Broadway. I've lost that part twice to two white girls.
There you go.
Hispanic,
not
white
fair.
Girls. One of them couldn't even act.
Not
I was
fair.
An understudy for it. It was frustrating. And I was just like,
you're always going to be better than that guy. You know how many actors it takes to change a light bulb? You know this one.
Yeah.
It takes one to change the light bulb and nine to stand around going, I could do that better. Right, yes.
I don't know what you think about this, but my theater professor at my university has talked a lot about how most MFA programs now are not hiring unless you have some regional credits under your belt so they know you're serious about the business. Do you have any insight on that?
Yep, that's very possible. I would go for internships, if at all possible. Even back when I was at Actors Theatre years ago, the interns, that's 1 year slave labor, right? You all know that? But find the best theatre you can if you're going to give a year of your life to it, right? So Actors Theatre of Louisville, John Jury, mover and shaker of American Regional Theatre, was giving audition classes to the interns. This was like, whoa! And 3 to 5 of them per year that I was there were getting into Yale and Juilliard and the big programs, SMU and oops. And so yes, that makes perfect sense and sad sense. And the reality is there. You want to do repertory theatre, you're going to need your MFA. I dated a woman, fabulous actress, studied Uta Hagen and Stella Adler when she was still alive. This was a couple of years ago, right? And she was great, but she took the work available. So her resume started filling up. She had a great voice. Started filling up with musical theater. She didn't have her MFA. She couldn't even get an audition for the stuff when it was in town. And she's amazing. She said, enough of this. I'm going to take an audition tour. So she borrowed a car, got a friend, worked up a scene, and went to those theaters and made appointments. And generally, if you make that kind of effort, they'll actually see you, you know? So she was amazing. But yeah, MFAs, hard stuff. Yeah.
I guess where I'm at right now is like, I sort of look at Christian theater today, and a lot of times I feel like resources aren't really given to them at all. And so a lot of times you study, you know, Uta Hagen and Stanislavski and Donilon and Meisner and all of them, and it's just like you have all this stuff, all this meat that you're given. But a lot of times in Christian theater, it's just like, I like theater, you like theater, let's do some theater, you know? It's just like a lot of times it's really crushing.
Christian theater is better than it's ever been in some places. Pacific Theater Company, Vancouver, is doing high-level work. Taproot, I think, is doing good stuff. Yeah, and it's really difficult. It's better than it's ever been, if that's an encouragement.
But it's like, I guess for me, like, it's when you know, like, God is your passion, more so than theater, which is, you should always have something.
Is.
And, I guess for me, trying to figure out, you know, like, I want to be able to do wholesome and quality in my faith.
Oh, boy. Did everybody hear that? Yeah. I want to do wholesome and quality theater without compromising my faith. Good luck.
Yeah.
I mean, the difficulty, my wife's a painter. She can paint whether people buy her stuff or not. She can paint. Writers, they can still do their thing. We need each other, and we need the business. And we're going to have to do stuff from other people's worldviews. And if it's stuff of integrity, hopefully it will be dealing with truth, even if you have to play the darkest character. But theoretically, Christian actors know evil better because we're swimming against the current, right? Okay, brief story. Holy Ghosts, Romulus Linney, great playwright, but it's just a wacko character parade of Pentecostal snake handlers, and but it's a great play. But the head pastor, you know, had burned out his fifth wife. I mean, literally, she was dead from exhaustion and child rearing. And he was a hypocrite. He was just, you know. I said to this actor, like, you know, you don't usually talk to other actors, but this was a friend. And I said, I think you could get more out of this character, I mean, who am I, if he actually was a believer. Because then he knows he's a hypocrite. And it throws all this kind of wacko kind of, I'm doing these awful things, but I know better, and I can't help, and I can't. And you get all this wonderful character tension. And he said to me, Bruce, he's a used car salesman. And this was an otherwise good actor. and all that showed up on the stage was a used car salesman. What a shame. You know? Meanwhile, I'm playing Carl, the psychotic, right? And Romulus Linney came to the show, and he said, Carl, Bruce, Carl is usually just played as this stupid, wacko kind of homeless guy. But because I'm a Christian, I took these bizarre statements. He always told stories about his dog, okay? Actor talking about a role, sorry. But these non-sequitur dog stories that had nothing to do with anything else, right? And then it clicked. These are parables. These are parables. And just like Jesus, he's not explaining his parables. And he wants to bring all these people back on the right path. But he had a horrible experience with this dog that he loved that got poisoned by hunters, by rich hunters, because he was winning all the events. And it whacked him out. So now all he does is tell parables about God through stories of his dog. Okay? The key. So like, I'm sitting there the whole time getting ready with my next parable. Right? And then when my turn comes, when I have a break, when there's like, I'm going to get him. I'm going to tell him this story about my dog. And I was so into it. I had that, you know, this was it. First night, I'm like, I tell this incredible parable, and it's detailed. Okay? Everybody else thinks you're homeless. But you know the other sentences. Right? Right. So I had this whole monologue that I had been going through, and they only got this little tip of the monologue. And the audience roared. I mean, there was this moment of stillness of, wah! And I was completely unprepared. I wanted to turn around and go, that's not funny! You know? But the whole reason it was funny was because I had done my work as an actor and created this whole other world based on my worldview. Because I was a Christian, I could bring it to that. And Romulus Linney said, other people don't do that. And the director said, pat your invisible dog. No, I'm not going to play just the wacko character for the laugh. This guy has an integrity to him, right? One more glory story, okay? Javert got the understudy. After 2 years, the guy with the lead, with the blue contract, didn't want to play 8 shows a week. He wanted to play 7. Ah, understudy paradise, right? So I was getting on, regular, right? So I come off stage one night, and one of the original cast is still there, and she says, Bruce, I've never seen a Javert that killed himself because God didn't exist anymore. I went, wow. Right? Because both of us had seen 12 Javerts or more by the time 2 years was over, right? But she saw why I killed myself. And believe me, as an understudy, you do the same blocking, same notes, same everything.
Yeah.
Right? There's no creativity allowed, right? But it was mine, and she got it. And nobody else thought to make Javert a Janist. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing it. It's a fundamentalist Catholic, right? From that period, who believes in no mercy, justice. That was Javert. And stars is a prayer. It's like, help me, get this guy, because you're gonna throw me into hell if I fail. And he did fail. And like a fundamentalist, fundamentalists don't think well. You know, it's like black or white, and it's one or the other. There's not much in between. So when this guy turns out to be more loving than him, God doesn't exist. What? It's not a jump I would make, but it's a jump I recognize, because I'm a Christian. And I know people who think this way. So the whole point of this little sermon, yourself that's being formed by relationship, right? Hopefully by relationship with Christ, makes you who you are. A side benefit of that is you are unique in the theater world. You can bring things to your characters that they don't know about because they're drifting with the current of culture. You're the one drifting against it. You're the one that can say, well, actually, my idea of evil is a little more than comic book. It's actually multi-layered, and it's really smart, and it looks good. Real good lies always have 80% of truth wrapped up in them. But every once in a while you get a glimpse. Best compliment I got from Javert was, I kind of liked him. Yeah. Meanwhile, Richard said, look, I just want a bad guy. He literally said this in a rehearsal. I just want a bad guy. Right? You've all dealt with horrible directors, right?
Yeah.
Get used to it and get the training you need to do good work in spite of them. Right? Let's open up more. What do you want to talk about? Yes?
What is discipleship looks like in the theater between other Christians?
Huh. Discipleship, that implies you're going to know other Christians in the business. No, I'm kidding. Actually, there are more Christians in the professional theater than ever before. When I was there 15 years ago, there was maybe one per show, but there's more now. Okay? So discipleship, find a good church. And there are great churches in New York and Los Angeles and Seattle.
How did you know that where God was leading you? Like, how did you want to do it?
Where God was leading me. Oh, boy. It's like, can you be a little more definite, please? It's like, you're not going to know. Sorry. It's like he treats us like adults. You know? If my 10-year-old daughter comes to me and says, Daddy, what should I do here? I'll say, well, actually, this is a good idea, and this is a good idea, and she probably won't do it anyway, you know, but when she's 21, and she says, Dad, should I do this or should I do that? I'm going to do, what do you want? And she's going to say, should I marry this guy? And I'm going to say, how much do you want to marry this guy? And I really think God treats us that way. So you want to do something? Ask a blessing. Say, I think this is right. I really want to do this. Help. If it's not the right way, block it and make me sensitive enough so that I can feel a lack of peace about it and follow that lack of peace. Or follow the peace. And read books on guidance and all that normal stuff that has to do with everybody else, even if they're not in theater.
Experience as an actor, been offered a specific role, but weren't sure whether or not you should take that role based on like any content issues that they're...
Sure. The which role did I turn down question. I'll tell you, the hardest, yes, the hardest is in undergraduate school, okay? Because you're in this greenhouse environment, and if you turn down the role, that professor will be insulted, and you won't be cast for the next 3 years, right? But good news, the real world is not like that. It's so much easier when you get out of school, and that includes MFA programs, because you don't want that role that requires you to, you know, take your clothes off or, you know, the orgy scene at the end, or you don't have to do it and nobody cares. It's like if you don't audition for something, fine, who cares? And your agent, hopefully, if they know you well enough, will say, it's got this in it. Do you really, are you interested in this? And you get to decide because Equity says they have to let you know if nudity is involved at least. You know, the language issue is something else. I hope it's not too much of a concern. Right. We won't have to talk about that unless we have to. But roles. A friend of mine, a Christian colleague, took a role in a musical, Kiss of the Spider Woman. Do you know that show?
Yeah.
Well, he played the macho rebel guy. And I came to see him on his last night because I hadn't seen him for the whole run. And I was sitting next to his fiancée, who was also a Christian woman. And right about the time where he has to kiss the other guy on stage 8 times a week, she turned to me and said, it was really hard for Tony to take this role. And I said, yeah, I imagine it was quite a struggle. And I don't know Tony well enough to know what kind of struggle he went through, whether he was on his knees and said, Lord, I know this musical is basically a really good sort of gay fantasy, is what it is. No judgments. It's just, you know, the little effeminate guy seduces the macho hetero rebel leader, right? In this fabulous musical, right? It's just, and it's really well done. Whether he was on his knees saying, Lord, should I take this or not? And the Lord said, no, say. And he said, well, actually, I get to work with this director and I get a shot at a Tony Award. And he did win a Tony Award. And sorry, I'm going to do it anyway. I don't know the struggle he went through or whether he even had a struggle. I don't know. Harold Prince. How much struggle do you have to go through to work with Harold Prince, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, hard one, right? Yeah. But whether he struggled or not, I don't know. But one thing I do know, if he made a mistake, if he said, no, I've got a shot at a Tony Award and I don't feel good about this, I'm going to do it anyway, God is so great that he uses our mistakes not to just fix them, but to make it better than it was had we not made the mistake. That's how great our God is, right? Now, it's dangerous. Should we sin in order to, you know, if he fixes things so better that it's not fixed, it's better than it was before, does that mean we should do the bad things? No, that's stupid human thinking, says Paul, right, in Romans. But meanwhile, don't sweat it too much. Sweat it a little. But you know what I mean? It's like, stop being so serious and taking yourself so seriously. And it's like, stick to God, stick close, and you are going to make this. Even if you make mistakes, and you will make mistakes, everyone in this room will fail in their Christian walk. And the only question is, are you going to fail like Peter, or are you going to fail like Judas? Come back or not? And I've got some friends, good friend of mine. I almost got into Kiss of the Spider Woman. Really good friend of mine, solid Christian man, a good dancer. He died a couple of years ago of a heart attack while playing a fallen angel. And friends told me at his funeral that in one room was his wife and two kids, and the other room was his mistress. Right. He blew it. He went under. He got sucked under by the life. Right? Hardest thing about the life for me was seeing these beautiful, talented, spiritually advanced people who didn't seem to need God. And they had all these like answers that I didn't have. And these, they'd figured Christianity out and thrown it out. That's the, that was the hardest, most seductive thing about this world. Yes?
I guess I'm looking for advice about my particular situation, which is that I'm struggling with these longings to do both, to be an actress, to, I love opera, I want to sing.
Oh, I'm so sorry. That's a whole other world. Opera's even worse than theater. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I want to do that. And what I really feel called to do long term, but I don't know how long term. I have this big long term goal, but no short term goals.
Okay.
And I want to use music and theater as therapy.
Oh my goodness.
So.
Right. Great.
So I'm wondering, do you have any advice? I don't know how to get into that.
If that's where your heart is. Yeah, I mean, there is ministry work available for talented people. I mean, the head of my program, he said, all of you would make great middle management people. You're all intelligent and attractive and have good social skills. You know, you want to go into ministry, definitely go into ministry. Now, if you need the credibility of the profession, like, that one role in Les Mis, I'm a Broadway actor, right? It has been really useful. You know, the fact that I played Puck at Actors Theatre of Louisville, nobody's even heard of Actors Theatre of Louisville outside of our business. How many of you have heard of Actors Theatre of Louisville? That's fairly good, but something I told a friend this morning, 25% of your energy needs to be on the business, folks. I graduated that three-year MFA conservatory program not knowing Actors Theatre of Louisville, not knowing what that was. Be smarter than me. 25% needs to be business-oriented, okay? So get to know the names of repertory theater companies and their artistic directors and if they've got casting directors. You need to know who these people are, what their seasons are, what kind of things do they do. Is that where you want to work? Find out who's worked there. Have any of your friends worked there? The folks you do, whatchamacallit summer stock theater in Hoosit, Minnesota, are going to be, it happened to me. Have you heard of Joanne? No, Joanne, geez, summer stock, like 7 years ago. What's with her? She's the associate casting director for All My Children now. Oh, right? That's the way the business works. So, yes. Unless you need the professional credibility of an opera singer, I mean, once you sing at the Met, that's it. You want to do anything else? You want to go to Africa? Then you're a Met diva. You can do anything you want because you'll have the credibility. You know what I'm saying?
Yes and no.
I don't think you need to go to the Met. If you want to use opera to help victims of the sex trade, you don't need professional credentials for that, do you?
I don't know.
There are music therapy programs. Do that. Don't. I mean, the opera world. Jeez. Yeah, my voice teacher, when I had some money, I was taking voice lessons, and she broke into the Met while I was studying with her, and I saw her on the street one day, and like I'd only seen her in sweats in her apartment, you know, with the grand piano. And I see her on the street, and it's like, it's 11 o'clock in the morning. What are you dressed like that for? And she said to me, Bruce, I'm a diva now. I can't be caught in my sweats outside my apartment, because if someone takes a picture of me and puts this in and sells it to a newspaper, that's the end of my career, because I'm in opera. Right? Whole other world. There's a whole lot of vanity, a whole lot of stuff that you don't have to deal with as an actor. Oh, it's nasty. Yes?
Generally, the theater world, whether it's theater, any kind of theater, it can be really full of bitterness, particularly on a personal level, because you know what, you did deserve that part.
Yes.
And that's just like, if you decide to be on this pursuit, that's what you deal with. Do you have any advice as a Christian, how to deal with that and be an example to people? Because
pray.
You're going to be ticked off.
Like, pray. Pray hard. Make sure your closest friends are believers, the ones you take advice from, right? Because if they're not, the advice you're going to get is, Bruce, you need to relax a little. What? You need to get laid. That would solve your problems, you know? And it's like, well, you see, if I took your advice, then my life would look like yours, right? And then they go, oh, yeah, you don't want that, right? Right, and this bitterness thing, yeah, get over it. You've got another 50 auditions to go before you get the job, and other people are going to get those auditions too. And meanwhile, you get to walk in the room because you can free yourself of that crap, and you can turn the other cheek, right? Or at least you're working towards that.
Right.
Right. Really. Because you can do that, you can walk into that 49th audition free of the bitterness and the weight and the depression that comes from the kind of the rejection you have to deal with, and like be a pleasant person and be ready. And I tell you, that pleasant person, any of you get a chance to sit in on auditions to be the other person, the reader is what it's called, you know, for professional theater, you go up to the associate stage manager or something and say, I want to be a reader, and they'll go, for free? And you go, yes. And they'll go, you want to give 8 hours of a day to sit and read the other roles that you're not up for? Yes, I want to do that. Great, thanks. You get to sit on that audition and see how the real process is, and you will be surprised how sane people get the auditions. I told this story this morning as well when I did this, and this wonderful actor comes in and goes, I'll be ready in just a minute, you know, I just got to prepare. Okay, I'm ready. And they're like, and they do their thing, and they leave, and the director turns to me and says, would you want to work with that? And like, yes, because he's like a really good actor. Clearly he has some personal problems, but like, he's a really good actor, you know? And then the person walks in who says, hi, I'm Joe, and I worked with Sam so-and-so. Who did? Oh, Sam, yes, how's he doing? Oh, he's at Arlington Ravnik. You're kidding, what's he doing? Well, he did this and that. Where did you work together? Oh, we did, I've heard of this. Oh, terrific, so what have you got for us? And he was okay, and he got the job, but he was just okay. Here's another story. Oh, always be nice to stage managers. Yeah. And do what they say. Do what they say, because they will be sitting next to the director you want to work for in 5 years. I guarantee it. And you leave the room, and they'll be so friendly to you, right? Hey! And you leave the room, and she'll turn, and he'll say, so you worked with this person? Yes, but they were never on time for rehearsals. Ah. Out. Or the other side of it is, oh no, I know he's not the best actor, but he studied to be a pastor at a seminary, and he's got all these counseling skills. And I was on the bus and truck with him, and he was like the dad to everybody. And he was like fabulous, and you really want him on this bus and truck. And it's like a small role, who cares? Great, we'll hire him. It's who you know, but it's all from trust. There's so many wacky people out there, and these are expensive productions, and you can't depend on wacky people. So you got to work with people and show you're sane and get rid of that bitterness. You know, love people, love your enemies, and you will shock people. Yes.
How do you train yourself as an actor on a daily basis? Is there a practical way that you...
Right, get a job.
If you're not really working on a stage right now.
Right. That's the hardest thing about our business. Painters can paint, writers can write, we have to get a job. And Uta Hagen has these little acting exercises supposedly you can do on your own, and who actually does them? Is anyone actually? Whoa. Cool. First one I've ever met. Okay. Yeah. No. You go to training, you go to school for training, and you take acting classes. And hopefully, maybe for life. You know? And I know the good actors are taking classes, back into scene study, keep it sharp. But yeah, daily stuff on your own, yeah, it's hard that way. Yeah.
How do you minister to the people you're with? My experience in the theater department at my school is everyone's busy,
right,
burning the candle at both ends,
right,
have no time.
Right.
So I find it very difficult to care and feel meet Jesus, and I just see their soul crying out for him.
Right, right.
I can't even offer them to come over to my place and have dinner, and so we can talk, because they're eating on their way from work to,
right,
their second job.
Yeah. Pray. Pray for the people that are ready to hear what you have to say, and that things will work out. And yeah, get used to it, because it doesn't change. And Les Mis, you know, I'm like ready to go out after the show, my first night, and they've been there for 7 months. The Tony Awards are done, and it's like, yeah, we're going home, bye. It's like, yeah, and every once in a while you can go out for a beer after the show or something, and you can make friends, and not evangelism targets, right?
Yeah.
But friends, and within a friendship, there's plenty of room to minister, right? But yeah, pray for friends. Yeah. And there's plenty of needy people. Actually, it's the opposite problem of, if you're one of those caring magnets, watch out. Right. Yes.
Did you say something about how don't take the mission, if you want to be in mission?
Right. Okay. I'll try to make that clearer. You want to minister to actors, you have to be an actor. And you have to be a good one, because that's how you get respect, and that's how people, actors will listen to you if you're another actor, right? But at the same time, it's not a ministry. what we just talked about, this friendship and caring for people. That's what you can do in any profession as a lawyer or whatever. That's the normal day-to-day stuff where most of the ministry really happens, okay? Now, meanwhile, if you're interested in, like, ministry, well, the InterVarsity is putting together an arts ministry and looking for staff of theater people who want to minister to other theater students, right? And find the niches in the calendar where we can actually, you know, on Monday afternoon, we can actually get together a little bit. So if you're interested in ministry that way, there are lots of opportunities, and you don't need to go to an MFA program to do that, right?
But that's, yeah, and that's the thing. I feel like a lot of pressure as a Christian, just even since I've been times when I talk about, well, I'm a music theater major.
Right, right.
And then it becomes, oh, well, that's great. You can use these gifts.
Oh, great. That's, yeah. Get used to it, and yeah, it doesn't stop. And you will make, God is calling you to be his youth pastor. But wait till you hear yourself. Right? Yeah. You'll, and they will not understand why you've had 5 hours of rehearsal. You're going home to rehearse more? Yes. Why? If they're not going to get it, they're not going to get it. Why it takes 8 hours of piano rehearsal a day to get where you need to get? They won't get that. And don't expect them to. And
I'm sort of on the same lines as that group. All the judgment that comes along with being an actor in terms of...
get used to it.
Especially in the Christian world, though, like, you know, you're on stage
right.
And, oh, you shouldn't be doing that because
get
your
used
father
to it.
Is Christ.
Right,
know?
Right. Like, yeah. Well, I tell you, you know, Paul says, if I don't, in order to not offend one of my brothers or sisters, if I have to not eat meat for the rest of my life, I'll do that so that none of these brothers will stumble, right? Well, unfortunately, we are in a public medium, right? So, and stumblers are all over the place, right? So don't invite the vegetarians to the barbecue, right? You know people are going to be offended by the show you're in? Don't invite them. Sorry, right? I mean, there may be roles that you shouldn't do. I don't know. That really is your choice and your mistake to make. And maybe you'll apologize later, or maybe you'll say, well, actually, you know, I'm sorry I had to play a character that said a bad word on stage, but this character would. Sorry. You know, and it may be costly. Yeah. Somebody said to me one time, you've been playing, you know, the Gospel of Luke and ministering to college campuses all over the country. And, you know, aren't you afraid if you, like, get back into the business and you take some role of some adulterer on a soap opera, that will, you know, it's like, ooh, oh, you're right. There's going to be people who are like, oh, it's like, can't help it. Hopefully I'll be able to play a better adulterer. As a role, you understand. Right. Right? Hopefully I can bring something to this adulterer that has some truth in it instead of glamorizing it, maybe? Or whatever. You know what I mean? Bring as much truth as you can to a badly written role. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure you've had shows that you've not either auditioned for, you know,
right,
or anything, just because you're just not...
There have been shows that I've just said, you know, as a matter of fact, Kiss of the Spider Woman.
Yeah.
A year later, the director, the casting director said, we're looking for a replacement for the effeminate character. And, you know, he remembers you from the final callbacks in the chorus. And, you know, I'm calling in three people for this replacement role. You have a good shot at it. Do you want it? And I said, you know, I don't think I want to play that role. And it's not this big sort of, whoa, it's a bet, you know, it's like, and that was very rare, actually. That was one of the few times outside of undergraduate school. In undergrad school, there were plenty of roles I didn't want to play because they can get away with it, right? They can get away with putting junk up there that people would never play money to see, right? But it's a, right. And I said, I actually don't. I mean, it's a great role, actually. It's a wonderful role. I just don't want to do that.
Well, and I guess for me, it's like playing, being a piece in a whole. Like, there might be a show where, all in all, it's like...
You get used to being in stuff that does not reflect your worldview. There it is. You know, and we're going to be... We deal in a mixed medium, and there's a lot of other people involved, and actually... Some of those Christians that are criticizing you may not have non-Christian friends, right? But you do, and God is good. And salt and light, salt and light. You know, and there are exceptions. There was a guy I heard about that, there was a musical years ago called O Calcutta. Anybody heard of that thing? Yeah, oh, right. Yeah, you know, in 1960s, there was no nudity on stage. So, Oh, Calcutta was this nude musical. Ooh. But you know, by about 1980, it wasn't that, like, big a deal anymore. It was just kind of sad, you know? And there was a Christian in there. And it's like, what excuse do you have for being in there?
Yeah.
It's bad theater, and it's slimy by 20 years later. Come on, really? You really shouldn't be there. But not any sort of big morality. It's just so bad. Couldn't you find any other work? You know, really, and it's ruining. You don't want to put that on your resume. It's so bad. Kind of thing. Yeah. How are we doing for time? We must be running out. 15 minutes. Okay, that's not so bad. Yes?
Sorry, I don't know how to answer this shortly. Ask this shortly.
Okay.
I've struggled a lot with just the role of acting in my life. For some reason, I just really felt like God didn't want me to do it. I felt like it was something evil.
You know, oh.
Anyways, and so I really felt like God didn't want me to do it. And for the longest time, I just sacrificed it. I said, fine.
Okay.
And I know that it's still eating me up because I still want to do it. And
yeah.
It sounds like it's so hard.
It really is hard.
And I don't even, like, by this point, I just said, you know what, it's just too much of a passion of mine. I can't ignore this desire of mine to want to do it. And so I'm finally just saying, you know what, screw it. I have no idea how I came up with that conclusion. I just want to take a shot at it.
Great.
I'm 29 years old.
Okay.
I feel like I'm a little bit older.
Well.
And
yes.
But there's this other part of me that really, really wants to just... you know, go on missions, or supposed to be doing as Christians.
Ooh, supposed to be doing? Right.
I mean, what...
No, I got it.
You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean.
Just as long as Christian to reach out to people, you know, and so... and I think that they're not mutually exclusive, you know? I think that's the exact same reason why I want to be an actor, because I want to reach out to the souls of other people.
I know
and
that.
That great person that makes an impact on theater. But if it's going to be that hard to... play even substantial.
No, it's an awful industry. It's an amusement industry.
Is it worth us?
That's a really good question. Is it worth it? Is my question. And it's the reason why half of my career has been spent in ministry.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, that's. I feel like you've just landed such a sweet spot.
I have landed such a sweet spot.
That's exactly like ultimately where I want to be.
Right.
Doing something that's glorious to God.
Yeah.
And doing exactly what you will in the medium that you love.
Yeah, it's good. For me. Yeah, it's really hard.
I don't know. Like, should I even just... I feel like you have to go around this roundabout way when you just want... You could just...
You got to work this out. It's much easier to go on mission field.
Yeah.
And, you know the statistics, right? 4 times as many women in the business as men.
Yeah.
And 1/3 as many roles. And you start throwing in that non-white thing in there,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
I don't have to tell you, right? Yeah. So you want to be an actor? Great. Will the market let you? Will the market let you do what you do?
I guess a side question to that is there any alternative to just?
Yes, I found it. There is a Christian theater niche there, and it's growing. And the church is actually more open to theater than ever. I know 6 other actors, 2 of them women, 8, 2 of them women, who are making full-time ministries from solo theater. And one is working with her husband to do combination stuff. And they do conferences. And they do occasionally Christian theaters and churches. And it's a niche, you know? And the problem is, if you can get work with InterVarsity, you will, as a theater person, you will be able to reach non-Christians. But the Christian theater, the Christian bubble is pretty thick. Yeah. So that's also a dilemma. I mean, you know, I do a lot of churches with what I do. And it's like I look around and go, you all can read the book. Mm-hmm. Right? It's like nobody has any non-Christian friends they could have brought tonight. So it's like always ongoing dilemma. But meanwhile, if you want to memorize, say, the Gospel of John, I'm serious this, and present it as an eyewitness and make a good piece of theater out of it and keep it to 90 minutes, there are people making full-time ministries with this because the Gospels make good theater.
We talked about how Christian theater can be rather cheesy.
It can be.
And mostly because...
It's getting better.
Yes, praise the Lord. Because there is less of an emphasis on like developing skill and more of an emphasis on developing like relationship with God. But like in other art forms, I've seen like in music, for instance, like hip-hop music, there's sort of like gradually moving from like cheesy to like well-produced, like,
yeah,
like good like, lyrically and stuff like that.
Right.
And so I'm wondering, do you think that there is hope for like the Christian theater world to truly intersect with the mainstream theater world and make an impact, like, set the Christian...
The difficulty, I'm going to cut you off here because I know this question and I've been dealing with it, is, Taproot Theater Company, Pacific Theater Company, as far as I know, professionally, have done the best job of not presenting Christian theater, but presenting good theater from their Christian worldview. It's like, yeah, this is our take on it, but we don't do propaganda theater, thank you. And most ministries want to use theater, key term, that's the clue. They want to use theater to get their message across. And I'm sorry, propaganda theater, whether it's by, what's his name, who did Bowling for Columbine or whatever, is just bad theater generally, whether it's black theater, or whether it's gay theater, or whether it's Christian theater, or whether it's, we got a message and we're going to give it to you, and it's like, ah, thank you very much, got your message. But I had no theater experience here. Where's the story? Let me figure it out, please. Help me, guide me to your viewpoint, but please don't tell me what I should write. Classic art, what art does best. What Jesus did with parables. Here, it's on the table. What are you going to do with it?
Yeah, I also was wondering, like, what do you think, what is your focus, and what do you think, like, the rest of the actors feel like, as to, what do you think the goal of theater is?
Goal of theater, yeah, boy, get a job. yeah, goal of theater. I tell you, it sounds like you need to start a theater company. Yeah, which means finding a good business people, because actors are terrible business people, you know? goal of theater. Boy, it's too much of an amusement industry to do that. And only the rich folks are going to be able to afford to buy your tickets unless you go to the rich corporations and get the sponsorship. But that's artistic director stuff, and that's not our actors, right? Hard stuff. And it's always been the case. And the brilliant actors who want to save society in a non-religious way are always the most desperate, frustrated people at the end of their life, because, like, nobody cares. Yeah.
You've been doing theater in other countries, you said.
Right.
Is it as much of an amusement industry in those other countries?
I'd say less. Government-supported theater has more room to do real theater, and it's not amusement-driven. Right.
Everything in the world is also God.
Right.
It's God. He owns it. And theater actually started in the church. So how do we kind of reclaim theater in the mainstream to God? How do we
get a job?
Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I know exactly what you mean. Get a job. Get a job in the theater. Be a Christian. Salt and light. And find the other Christians in the company, because there may be two or three in various stages of hiding in the closet, right? And love on people. And, well, is this funny? Or are they getting lost? Oh, trying not to draw attention to yourselves. I appreciate that. Yeah, it's like, how do we do this? Salt and light, one person at a time. You're in a new play festival, and you say, you dare to say to the playwright, could I try something? And he goes, yeah. All right, can I say this? And the playwright goes, yes. Wow. And you've just influenced American theater, you know? And it's like, maybe your take on a character will open up something that hasn't been done before. And maybe people will leave with a slightly different notion of evil. But I'll tell you, don't get your hopes up. Okay? Because there were the folks outside of the stage door of Les Mis. Oh, I love Les Mis. I've seen it 12 times. You've seen a show about homeless people 12 times? $50 a shot? Don't see this musical anymore and give your money some homeless people. Or a shelter or something. Has this theater had any impact on your life whatsoever? Or is it just an emotional roller coaster? And the answer is, it's an emotional roller coaster. And that's theater. It's an amusement industry. So, yeah, get in there and get a job. And be a director. And pick good shows. Some say? Pointing. Yes, thanks.
With all due respect, you have the time for the audience, and people are here because of what you have to share. I just want to share something really quick.
There are 30 seconds.
Yes. In Colombia, people are doing theater without being an actor, without studying arts, without being a... Sorry.
No, this needs to be said.
First of all, I'm here. I am not an actor. I'm here on behalf of a friend. Her name is Lily Cordell. She's in Orlando studying what you're studying. And I'm here getting your notes and ideas. But I'm here for another reason. I guess God told me to tell you this. And you are 29 and you want to start an industry and you are a really good actress and you are affected by your melanin. But in Colombia, my friend started a ministry. She's not an actress. She's a communications major. Graduated, she hasn't found a job as a communicator, journalist, whatever. This is what she did. She took one class once in college by mistake. It was acting. She did this. She created a ministry called Adorarte, which means worship mixed up with arts. And what she did, she created a story, wrote a story, evaluated with an arts major person. She's a lot of changes, editing, done. She created a musical. She's not a musician. She's not an actress. She's nothing but a communicator. And they're using this message in Medellin, Bogota, and Cali, their main cities of Colombia. And she trained others to act. She only took one class. So she trained others. Here's the script. This is what you have to say. I have no idea how to explain this, but she explained to all of them how to act, how to do it. They've done it for 4 years. Every year for Christmas, they evangelize the entire city of Medellin, and the growth of Christians is through this play. Last year, I mean, the last one right now is called La Casita de Pan, which is the little gingerbread house. And it's mixing the story of gingerbread men with our reality and the gospel of Jesus, sharing the gospel through that 1 hour and a half musical. People are converted. She's not an actress. People want to be an actor, and they're studying in her ministry in arts, and she has no clue. So guys, there's future in South America.
Thanks. That was great. Start a company. It's like God is at work. And we've been talking about how to do this inside the theater profession, but there's ministry out there too. And boy, you got the energy when you're young. Go out and create something. And it's easy to complain about cheesy Christian theater. Stop complaining and do non-cheesy Christian theater. Right? We all know what propaganda theater looks like. do better propaganda theater so it doesn't smell like propaganda. Right? Yeah, good. Last, how are we doing? We're done. Okay. Here's my email. Ready? My name, Bruce Kuhn, one word, nothing between, @gmail.com. Okay? K-U-H-N. Right? N.
It's in the book.
You're right. In the seminar thing. I've been giving my email away for years, and people say, you're going to get flooded. And I never do. So it's like, flood me. Seriously, you say to me, I'm an actor and we talked, or I went to your seminar, and I will answer that email. Okay? Okay, great.
Thanks. You.
Quick prayer. Ready? Yes. Holy God, holy God, holy God, peace, peace. Boy, take away the seriousness that we approach the reality that you gave us to work in. Thanks. Make answers clear. Boy, help us to minister and break out of boxes and maybe, you know, do something different than this amusement industry that's built up. For your word, your kingdom, thanks. Amen.